Okay, just what I was referring to. Last time when I left the shiur here, we got to the airport. I get out to go, and I check my pocket, and I only have one passport. My American passport is gone. And so I figured it fell out in the car. We looked, took the car apart. It wasn't there. We called Dr. Hafnun and told him I probably dropped it here in the shul. He ran back here to the shul and made bedikas chametz here, looked where my car was, no passport. I asked him if I could get on the plane. I have an American passport. They can find me in the computer. I have an Israeli passport, so I can get out of the country. They said, no, they won't let me go unless I have a visa or a passport. So I missed that plane. Then I realized we had stopped for gas in Netanya before we came to the shir. And it's the only other place possibly it could be. So we came back here about 12 o'clock at night to the gas station, and I said to the attendant there, there was only one attendant, I said to him, did anybody find, he said, a darkon? He was waiting for me. And sure enough, they put it away in a drawer. It was very nice of them, because those are very valuable things. To especially to the attendant and his
group. But they wouldn't call you up to let you know?
Now they call me. How could they call me? So I tried to call them, but they didn't have any number. That they had a fax and a major business number. So he gave it to me right away. In fact, I should have given him something, you know. I went back there now, and I found out who it was. I'll go back there after the shiur and give him something for. But in any case, so that was this time. My wife said she will hold on to the passports. And,
when did you fly? Monday.
Where did I? What? When did I go last time?
Yeah.
I went to Los Angeles.
So when?
The next day.
The next day.
Next day.
Small penalty and small. Their eyes it was small. Okay, enough for that. There must have been some reason why I was supposed to spend one more day in Eretz Israel and not be in New York. I was supposed to go and rest in New York and then go to LA. This way I went straight from here, had to wait over an hour or two in New York, and straight to LA after that. That was a grueling trip.
My wife said that there's some reason why I make the guest comments.
Okay. In any case, I want to speak about this coming week's Sedra and answer a lot of questions that are in the Sedra with one perspective, one common thread. There are many answers to all the questions we're going to ask. But what I'm going to tell you is one perspective that will answer all the questions. Start with the major question here, and then we'll go and see some other more specific things. There's a famous Rashi, which you're all familiar with, but if you think about it, this Rashi is extremely, extremely difficult to understand. Rashi says on the Pasuk, Vayisrotzitzu habonim bekirba, that the children inside of Rivka were wrestling, fighting. And the Rashi says, whenever she passed by a place of idolatry, Esav wanted to go out. Whenever she passed by a Beis Medrash, Yaakov wanted to go out. So she didn't know what's going on. She has this kid who can't make up his mind. So she went to find out what's doing. She was told she has two children. Two. Very nice Rashi, except there's one problem. It seems to imply that Esav and Yaakov were already predestined to be a tzaddik and a rasha from before birth. That contradicts the entire Torah. Because if people are predestined to be tzaddik and rashaim, there's no free choice, there's no reward, there's no punishment, there's no purpose for the whole Torah. And we know that's not the case. People have free choice. They can become, but here Esav is a rasha running out to serve idolatry before he's born. And Yaakov's a tzaddik running out to learn Torah before he's born. In addition, aside from contradicting the whole basis of Judaism, there's another problem. There's a Gemara that the descendants of Yaakov and Esav, Rabbeinu Yaakovish, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the compiler of the Mishnah, and Antoninus, who was the Roman Caesar, who was a tzaddik. In the end of his life, he converted. But he used to learn secretly, together with Rabbi Yehuda Nosi, the things that a goy are allowed to learn. And they once had an argument: when does the Yetzer Hara enter a person? The Yetzer HaTov doesn't take full control until Bar Bas Mitzvah. But when does the Yetzer Hara start? So Rabbi Yehuda Nosi said from conception. Immediately when a person is conceived, he already has the Yetzer Hara. And Antoninus said no, only from birth. And Antoninus brought proof to his side, and in the end, Rebbe agreed, only from birth. There's no Yetzer Hara before birth. This Rashi contradicts that. Rashi says that Esav wanted to go out and serve idolatry before he was born. So you see there's Yetzer Hara before you're born too. Next question. Okay, so we have these two very distinct children. One a Rasha, one a Tzaddik, one who wants to serve idolatry, one who wants to learn Torah, and they're born. And it says, Vayigdalu hanorim, when they grew up, until they grew up, until they were 13, nobody took too much notice of them. They both went to school, came home from school, and nobody took notice of them. But when they were 13, Esav went out to idolatry, to the fields, and Yaakov went out to sit and learn Torah in a Beis Medrash. And then people began to take notice of the difference between these two children. It just said before they were born, they were so different. What happened? Soon they're born, all of a sudden they're the same. Both go to school, same little kids. And only when 13, the next morning, 13, Esav already changes again and Yaakov changes. Doesn't work like that. It's not the world. People are different before they're born. They're different as they're growing up too. They don't all of a sudden become different when they're bar mitzvah. Next question. Okay, so Esav and Yaakov are very different children. Esav's running to the forest to hunt, right? Seemingly interested in idolatry. And Yaakov is interested, he's sitting in a nice yeshiva bacher, sitting and learning Torah. And who does Yitzchok favor? Esav. And a father is this. Yitzchok doesn't know who his children are. He doesn't know that one child's a tzaddik and the other one's a rasha. And he favors the rasha. And not only that, he wants to give him the bracha. He's the one he wants to give the bracha to. Okay, so we can say that, okay, Esav really wasn't that bad. You know, he wasn't as good a kid as Yaakov. But he wasn't a bad kid. And therefore, he's the Bechor, and he should get the bracha. But at 15, Esav did some really terrible things. Moses says five things, we'll mention three of them. And on that day, Avraham Avinu died. The reason he died that day is that he should not see Esav going out of the derech in such a intense way. What happened that day? Esav went out and he committed three major sins. He served idolatry. He violated an engaged woman. And he murdered somebody. That's not bad for a 15-year-old on one day. Murder, adultery, idolatry. He came home tired. And so that's when he sold his birthright, whatever. In order that Avraham Avinu shouldn't see this, he died 5 years early. 5 years early. He was supposed to live another 5 years. God took him away. He shouldn't see his grandson going off the derech. Okay. Avraham Avinu had to die not to see this, so it was pretty obvious. And Yitzchok Avinu didn't recognize this is before he wanted to give him the bracha. After this, he still wants to give him the blessing. Didn't he realize that Esav's a Russian? I mean, the guy is, you know, not just a stab 15-year-old. This guy is really top class Russian. Okay, so we'll say, okay, Yitzchok was blind. He didn't know. Very hard to say. I mean, Yitzchok was one of the others. And I'll tell you that he did know the difference between his children. Because Rashi says that when Yaakov came in impersonating Esav, he slipped up twice and Yitzchok said, something's wrong over here, this is not Esav. What did he do? The first time he was asked, how come he came back so fast? So he said, Ki hikra Hashem Elokecha lefanai. because God made it go fast. Yitzchak said, I never heard Esav mention God's name. This can't be Esav. Now here's a father. He knows his son doesn't mention God's name. He has a son who sits and learns Torah. Another one doesn't even mention God's name. And this is the one he wants to give the bracha to. So he didn't know who he was. Second slip up was, he said, Yakum na avi, please, father, get up. Yitzchak said, this can't be Esav. Esav, I never heard him say please and thank you. He never said please. All of a sudden, this kid is saying please. It's not Esav. So here's a father. He knows his son is not good between man and man. He doesn't say please and thank you. He's not good between man and God. He doesn't mention God's name. And this is the one he wants to give the bracha to. Okay. So, for some reason, Yitzchak obviously doesn't know what's going on, which is extremely difficult to say. Again, he's one of the others. But Rivka knows. She knows that Yaakov deserves the bracha and not Esav. Okay. So why didn't she go into her husband and say, look, we got a problem over here. You obviously don't know who your children are, but Esav's a Rasha, Yaakov's a Tzaddik, give Yaakov the bracha. What does she do instead? Tries to fool him. Dress up Yaakov as Esav, sends him in to impersonate Esav to get the bracha. Why couldn't Rivka just go in and tell her husband? He wouldn't believe her. Why not? So some Mefarshim say because she was intimidated. Yitzchak was a scary guy, so she couldn't tell him these kind of things right out. But it's very difficult to understand that, because in the end of the Sedra, Rivka goes into Yitzchak and she says, I don't want Yaakov around here. I want him sent to my family to find a wife, because if he marries one of the daughters of Canaan, there's no reason for me to live. That was pretty strong words. So she wasn't intimidated to Yitzchak in the end of the Sedra. So why now? In order to answer all of this, I want to start with reading to you two Rambams. Same Sefer, Mishneh Torah, same author, Rambam. You're going to see that what he says is totally contradictory. Contradicts himself. The Rambam, first Rambam is in Hilchos Tshuva. Rambam says like this, Reshus lechol adam nitna imrotzo lahato satsmo l'derech tova v'liol tzadik harashus biyado v'imrotzo lahatos atzmo l'derech rov v'liol rosh harashus biyado. It's a foundation of Judaism that everyone has free choice. You can choose to be a tzadik, you can choose to be a rosh. And then the Rambam says in the second halacha there, al yavor b'machshov t'chadover zeh, don't even entertain the following thought. Don't even think such a thing. That what? Sha'omrim tipshei umos ha'olam v'rov golmei ben Israel. That foolish goyim believe, and even unpolished Jews think similarly. That what? Sha'kadosh baruch hu gozer al ha'odam mitchilas b'riyoso li'ol tzadik arosha. That God decrees on a person from his very inception, there is predetermination. People are predetermined to be a tzaddik or a rasha. It's everything is predestined. Ein hadover kein, says the Rambam. It's not true. Ela kol adam roi lo li osadik kamosh rabenu o rasha ki yaravam. Every person has the potential to either be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu or a rasha like Yaravam. Can't be a Navi like Moshe Rabbeinu, but you can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu on your level. No one forces him one way or the other. Velo gozer alav, no one decrees on him. Velo mishemoshchu le'echad mishnei adrochim. Nothing pulls him to one side or the other. Elohu me'atzmo midaito note le'ezadir shiirtza. He has total volition, total free choice. He can push himself to the right side or the left side, the good side or the bad side. Nope, pretty categoric from the Rambam, right? Nothing pushes you to either side, and you can be, right? He says, Tzadik or Rasha, Chacham or Sacha, wise or foolish, Rachman or Achzori, merciful or cruel, Kilai or Shua, stingy or generous, V'chein Shar Kol Adeh. Same thing goes with all the Midos. No one pushes you to be cruel or to be merciful. You decide on your own. Clear, Rambam, black and white. Okay. Now let me tell you another Rambam. The Rambam Hilchos Deos says the following: Deos harbi yesh to kol echad ve'echad ve'odam zeh mishunam zeh rechokim yana biyosef. People have many different character traits, different personalities, from one extreme to another. Some people are angered very quickly; they have short tempers. Some people are very cool, calm, and complacent. The Rambam says. Some people are very sensuous, and some people have no desires at all. Some people are cruel. Some people are merciful. Some people are stingy. Some people are, what's it called, generous. Okay, so that's a fact. People are different. Now the Rambam says, where does it come from? So you would say, you know where it comes from? Free choice. You choose. That's what the Rambam said in Hilchos Teshuva. Here the Rambam says something different. He said, not only is there extremes, but there's a lot in between. Some people are somewhat cruel, somewhat merciful, and so on. All of these midos, all of these traits, some of them are part of a person's nature from the time that he is conceived. According to his nature. Some of them he has a predisposition to. They're not part of him from his inception, but he has a predisposition to them. It's easier for him. There's something pushing him to one side or the other. And some of them he learns from other people, from his environment. And some of them he learns on his own. This Rambam is diametrically opposed to the other one. The Rambam in the other place used the same exact examples. Cruel, merciful, stingy, and generous. Two of them are the exact same thing. There the Rambam says, you have total free choice of what you're going to be. No one forces you. No one decrees on you. This is not something that is innate. And nothing pushes you to one side or the other. And here the Rambam says those same exact qualities, some of them are part of your innate nature, meaning they're decreed on you, predestined, or that you have a predisposition, so something's pushing you to one side or the other. So which is it? Another problem with the Rambam is, the Rambam seems to contradict himself, is the Rambam contradicts the Gemara too. The Gemara says that when a person's conceived, a malach comes and takes that initial embryo, it's really called a blastula, the first few cells, and brings it before God. It's all figurative speaking. It doesn't mean the malach takes it anywhere. It remains inside the mother. But he presents this before God, and he says, what's going to be with this child? Is he going to be rich or poor? Strong or weak? Handsome or ugly? Smart or dull? But one thing isn't said. Tzaddik or Rasha. He's going to be righteous or wicked. That's not in God's hands. That's in your hands. But everything else is decreed, including smart and dull. The Rambam says you can be as smart as you want or as dull as you want. So which is it? The Rambam seems to contradict the Gemara too. Because the Gemara says that wisdom is decreed. And the Rambam says it's not. And the Rambam contradicts himself. Because the Rambam says that basically no character trait is decreed, and here the Rambam says that many character traits are decreed. The answer, I think, is very simple. These two Rambams are talking about completely different things. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos is talking about character traits. There's no doubt that people are born with different characters, with different personalities. It's a fact of life. You can have two children from the same family, twins. From the time they come home from the hospital, they exhibit different personalities. One is cool, calm, and collected. You can do whatever you want to him. He doesn't cry. And the other one is constantly crying. Everything bothers him, or whatever. You have two little children. They go to God. One comes home without his shoes, without his lunch. He gave it away to all his friends. And one comes home with everybody else's shoes and everybody else's lunch. He's a different children. So some children enjoy pulling the wings off of flies. They have a netiya towards cruelty. And some children don't have that netiya. They're squeamish. They faint at the sight of blood. That's a fact. People have different personalities. That's the Rambam in Hilchos Deos. And that is predetermined, predestined, possibly some things you have from, that's part of your innate personality, right? Some things you learn from other people, some things that you learn on your own, whatever. That's a fact. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva is talking about behavior, how you use those qualities. No quality is good or bad. They're all parv. Good or bad depends on circumstance, how you use them, not what you have. An example. Cruelty. Cruelty does not necessarily make a person a rasha. Right? Being cruel doesn't make you wicked, or is not even a negative thing necessarily. I'll give you an example. Somebody's walking down the street, and a terrorist just killed 200 innocent people. He's running with his machine gun to kill another 200 people, and he trips and falls at your feet. You're going to a baseball game, you have a baseball bat in your hand. He's fell on the ground in front of you, and he says, "Could you please help me up? I'm late for my appointment of killing another 200 people." You have a choice now. You can pick him up, set him on his way, and be responsible for 200 more people being killed. Or you can take the baseball bat, right, and crush his skull. Okay. What would be the proper behavior in that situation, unless you belong to the ACLU? But under normal circumstances, any normal person would say the proper behavior at that moment is to crush this guy's skull. And don't tell me, well, maybe you can give him a Musar Shmuz and convince him not to be a terrorist, right? Why do you have to kill the guy? Or you can maim him. No. I made up the marshal, and there's only two choices. Help him up or crush his skull. That's it. That's all you have to choose from. Okay? How do I know? I made up the marshal. I can make up the marshal any way I want. This is black and white. Okay? This is black and white. So you have two choices. Help the guy up or crush his skull. What would you say is the proper behavior? Crush the guy's skull. No shy. Right? This is a cold-blooded murder. You're saving 200 innocent lives by getting rid of this scourge on humanity. Okay.
Rabbi, isn't that also that you've got your own life to consider? There's a danger there.
No, he said he's not going to kill you.
You see how I said that?
Right, yeah. If you help him up, you can take his word, too, you know. In any case, so in that situation, let's say there's two people with baseball bats. One was born with a personality where he is predisposed to being cruel. He loves to pull the wings off of flies when he's a little kid. Okay, the other one is very squeamish. He faints at the sight of blood. Who's going to have an easier time to behave properly? The one who has the predisposition to cruelty, or the one who's squeamish? Obviously the one who's predisposed to cruelty. And this time, my personality is going to make me a tzaddik if I'm cruel. And your personality is going to make it difficult for you to be a tzaddik if you're squeamish. You're going to have to overpower your natural tendencies. Okay, that's one situation. Now, you've crushed this guy's skull, okay? You walk another 15 minutes, and a little old lady falls at your feet. Now you have a choice again, what to do. Crush her skull or help her up. Over here, I would imagine most of us would understand that you don't crush this little old lady's skull, but you help her up. Okay. Now, I, who have a tendency to be cruel, I'm going to have a harder time doing what's right, and you're going to have an easier time of doing what's right. So our tendency does not make us righteous or wicked. It's just a tendency. In certain circumstances, that tendency can be positive. In other circumstances, it can be negative. And you have no... That's what the Rambam says. No one forces you to use your tendencies one way or the other except yourself. You can choose. So the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva is talking about behavior. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos is talking about character traits. And they're both true. You definitely have character traits. How you use them is up to you. That is the two Rambams. Okay, now, there's only one problem. And therefore, Chazal say, people are born with tendencies. Somebody who's born with a tendency to enjoy shedding blood. Okay, he is, his nature is, like we said, to be cruel, or he's not squeamish. But he has a choice in life what to be. He could be a doctor. He could be a shochet. He could be a moel. Or he could be the head of the mafia. All of them use the same tendency, but for different reasons. You could do it in a mitzvah way, an aveira way, or a parava way. No one's forcing you how to use the tendency, even though the tendency is predetermined in many cases. The only problem is that it's not really fair. Because let's take, I'm predisposed to cruelty, and you're squeamish. Okay. Out of all the cases that come up in life, how many is being cruel a positive thing? Percentage-wise, probably about 10%. 90% of the time, it's not good to be cruel. On the other hand, 90% of the time it's good to be squeamish. Only 10% of the time it's not good to be squeamish. Right? You know, you don't have terrorists falling at your feet, but you have a baseball bat in your hand. So, if I was born with a tendency to be cruel, I have a greater chance of, if I just give in to my tendency and don't overpower it, to be a negative person. You, on the other hand, if you don't overpower your tendency, you're going to be okay. You only have to overpower your tendency 10% of the time. I have to overpower it 90% of the time. So it's not really fair, but it is. Because that would be a question if we only had one character trait. And you're stuck with the, I'm stuck with the bad one, you're stuck with the good one. The good meaning most of the time. But we have many character traits. So on the one hand, I may have a tendency to be cruel, but I also have a tendency to be generous. You may have a tendency to be squeamish, but you also have a tendency to be stingy. Stinginess most of the time is not good, but you can use it for the good. For instance, somebody, a drug addict, comes to you and wants money so he can feed his habit. Being generous is not going to be good at that time. You're feeding his habit, you're hurting that person. The best thing is to be cruel, not to give him and to force him to go and wean himself from his drug habit. So being generous at that time is not a good thing. Loaning somebody money who you know can't pay back and she's getting farther and farther in debt is not a good thing. It's not good to be generous then. It's good to be stingy then. So I have one character trait which is easier for me to use for the good, but one character trait is easier for me to use for the bad. And I have to overpower them when they make sure that I use them in the proper way. You have one that's easier for the good and one easier for the bad, so it evens out. The only problem with that is that we know people that have either a majority of good character traits or a majority of the negative character traits. They're stingy and cruel and whatever. Okay, so they really could use their character traits positively in certain situations, but the majority of situations are going to have to overpower it. So it's not fair. Again, with those people who have a majority of character traits that need to be overpowered most of the time, then that's not fair. So there's another consideration. The other consideration is that God takes that into consideration when he rewards or punishes you. Example. Let's say I have a tendency to lose my temper quickly. And you're cool, calm, and collected by nature. Okay. Somebody walks into the room and steps on both of our toes. And we both lose it. We go ballistic. Lose our temper. Okay. Who's going to get punished more? Me for losing my temper or you for losing your temper? You. Because God understands that my nature is to be hot-tempered. So it took a lot more for me to control myself. And if I didn't control myself, okay, it's understandable. That's my nature. But you are normally cool, calm, and collected. You lost your temper. That's much more serious. On the other hand, let's say both of us controlled ourselves and we didn't lose our temper. Who's going to get more reward? Me. took a lot more for me to control my temper than you. You by nature are cool, calm, and collected. Me, I had to go against my nature. So I'm going to get more reward. So, therefore, that helps to even it out. God understands your handicap. And he rewards you or punishes you accordingly. And the third factor that makes it fair is God is the one who brings the various situations that face you in life. And the Rabbanu Shlom makes the situations fit your character. And that's what we say, God doesn't give you a test that you can't pass. Okay? Only teachers give tests that people can't pass. God doesn't. And I've never understood why teachers do that. The purpose of a test is to let the kid feel good about himself that he can do something. Not to show him he can't do anything or he doesn't know anything. That's very debilitating. But God doesn't do that. God gives tests that you can pass. Meaning, he makes the tests in life fit your personality, and if they don't, then you're not expected to pass it. And God understands. Okay. What that means in detail is not for now. But that's a fact. Okay. So in any case, with this introduction, now let's understand the parasha of Yaakov and Esav from a completely different perspective. It's possible, okay, that both Yaakov and Esav could have both been righteous or both been wicked. Nothing decreed that one of them is going to be righteous and one wicked. And even though there are Medrashim that say that not all of Yitzchak is going to be the progenitor of the Jewish people, just like not all of Avram, Yishmael was out of the picture, ki bi Yitzchak, but not all of Yitzchak, that doesn't mean that Esav was disqualified before he was born. Because there's another Medrash that says that it was potentially possible, you know, we know what happened actually, but potentially possible that Yitzchak would have had 12 tribes, just like Yaakov. And therefore, it's possible, and there's even an opinion that Yitzchak did have other children that we don't know about. It's already mentioned that were important. More than Esav, Esav and Yaakov. There were other children. It's very possible that both Esav and Yaakov would have been tzaddikim, and they would have built the Jewish people, just like 12 children built Klal Yisrael from Yaakov Avin. And there would have been the tribe of Esav and the tribe of Yaakov, both righteous. The fact of the matter is they were different children, completely different personalities. Why? So here, this is my speculation. I have no proof to it. I have a little bit of a proof. Could have been that Esav was given a personality that would have engendered him to be able to produce kings. Jewish people need two kinds of leaders, a king and a Kohen Gadol. They're very different personalities. The king is a macho, aggressive person, has to be a tendency towards cruelty. He has to kill people, and he has to make rule of law. And the Kohen Gadol is a spiritual person, very calm, passive kind of person, not aggressive person. So Esav had the qualities of a king. How do I know that? Because there was another person in history who had the same exact character makeup as Esav. Who was that? David HaMelech. Admoni v'yefeinai. So you see that he had the qualities of a king. So David used his qualities for the good, and Esav chose to use them for the bad. Just like we said, you could use them for good or bad. You can suppress them when necessary, use them when necessary, and so on. Yaakov had the personality that fit a Kohen Gadol. And had they both chosen to use their personalities in a positive way, they both would have been tzaddikim, they both would have built the Jewish people. They both could have been tzaddikim, they both could have been rishoyim, either one could have been a tzaddik or a rosh. That's what Rashi says. Every time Rivka passed by a place of idolatry, Esav wanted to go out. Nowhere, to the best of my knowledge, does it ever say that Esav wanted to go out and serve idolatry. It's not what it says. It says he wanted to go out. Every time she passed the Beis Medrash, it says Yaakov wanted to go out. Nowhere does it say he wanted to go out and learn Torah. He wanted to go out. Meaning the following. Esav's personality was an intense personality to fit a king. The king is involved with the physical material world, basically. Therefore, he is attracted to physical material places. Doesn't mean he's going to do it bad. He could use it for the good. Right? a king can go out and destroy idolatry. But that's where his environment is, the physical, material world. Asa was drawn to that kind of environment like a magnet, because that fit his personality, very strong person from conception. Doesn't say he wanted to go serve idolatry, that would make it bad. It just said he was attracted to idolatry. Why? Because what is the most physical, material place in the world? A place where they take spirituality and turn it into physicality. That's idolatry. So like a magnet, Esav was, in fact, to prove to you, the Sifsei Kohen, which is the students of the Arizal, in a sefer called Sifsei Kohen, they asked the following very simple question. It says, every time Rivka passed by a place of idolatry, Esav wanted to go out. What was Rivka doing there? You're not allowed to hang around places of idolatry. Why was Rivka passing by a place of idolatry? It says, because Rivka grew up amongst idolaters, and she knew how to be mashpi on them. So she went, like Rabbi Grossman, into the pubs and into the places of idolatry to try to bring people back to belief in God. So who says that Esav wouldn't have done the same thing? But he didn't have a Yetzer Hara. It wasn't a question of good and bad. It was a question of character, of tendency. He had a character that attracted him, that drew him to physical, material places. He could have used it for the good, he could have bad. At this point, it wasn't good or bad. It was just character traits. Yaakov, on the other hand, had the character traits of a very spiritual, passive kind of person. So where's the place of spirituality? Beis Medrash. But that doesn't mean because you're attracted to a Beis Medrash, you're going to be a tzaddik. There are people who are attracted to spirituality who sit on the top of mountains and contemplate their navel for the rest of their life. They're not tzaddikim. They are not righteous people. But they're spiritual. Right? There are people who love to be in a Beis Medrash. They don't learn anything. They get a coffee break here, walk around, talk over here, whatever. But this is their environment. This is where I like to. I don't like to be in a physical, material place. I like, you know, this spiritual environment. But you don't do anything there. So just because you're attracted to a Beis Medrash doesn't mean you'll be a tzaddik. And just because you're attracted to the physical, material place in the world doesn't mean you'll be a Rasha. Depends how you use it. So that's all Rashi's saying. These two children had tremendous, intense personalities. One was drawn to this kind of environment, one to this. Didn't make either one a tzaddik or a Rasha. Doesn't contradict anything about free choice. Because either one could have used their tendency for the good or for the bad. Therefore, when they were born, nobody took notice of them. Meaning, of course they were different children, but they're just different personalities. So what? Everybody has different personalities. They didn't start yet to use their personalities in a positive or negative way till they were bar mitzvah. When they were bar mitzvah, then people started to take notice. Esav is using his personality in a negative way, and Yaakov is using his personality in a positive way. Could have been different. That's when they started to take notice. In fact, Shem Shon Ful Hirsch says that the Medrash that says that this one went to school and came home and this one went to school and came home is not just a story. It's a criticism of Yitzchak and Rivka. How could you send two such divergently different children to the same school? They're different children. A school that's good for a Yaakov is not good for an Esav. Esav has to go to a field school where he can learn how to shecht and to what's it called, hands-on kind of things. He's a physical person. And Yaakov has to go in a place where he's locked into four walls, sit down and learn all day. But that's not good for an Esav. And Yaakov, we pushed into the field, right? It's not for him. So he should have been smart enough to know, Yerusham Shavur says, sensitive enough to know that you can't send them to the same school. That Esav needs a school that fits his personality, and then maybe they both would have been tzaddikim. That's he says. I'm not saying. Rav Shem Shapiro says it. He has broad shoulders. He can say it. In any case, so that's what it means. They didn't take notice. Meaning, this was just different personalities. Nothing to take notice of. But they should have taken notice. But when they started to use their personalities, good and bad, then people took notice. Okay. So, again, The fact that Esav went to the field to hunt didn't make him a Rasha, because he could use that in a very positive way. The fact that Yaakov ended up in the Beis Medrash doesn't make him a tzaddik, because maybe he wouldn't use it in a positive way. So Yitzchak understood that his son Esav is using his qualities in a positive way, and he is the firstborn. He should get the bracha. The problem is those three sins that he committed when he was 15 years old, the day that Avraham Avinu died, and Avraham Avinu had to die not to see his grandson go off the derech. What sins did he commit? Murder, adultery, and idolatry. Now, at that point, Yitzchak should have known the guy's a Rasha. He's not just... It's not true. Because one of them is so clear, what I'm going to tell you, that you have to say something about the other ones, even though it's a little contrived. What's clear? Murder. Esav murdered. So who did he murder? Nimrod. Nimrod was the arch enemy of the world. The arch tyrant of the world. Adolf Hitler of his time. Okay? Nimrod. He made the whole world rebel against God. Tyrant. If somebody would have murdered Adolf Hitler, they would not have been considered a murderer. They would have been considered a hero. What do kings do? Kill tyrants. Right? Well, what did every king? David, right? David and Melech and all the other kings. That's their job. That's what a king is supposed to do. A king is not supposed to be this dainty little guy who... He has to be strong and powerful and destroy evil. So you could see Yitzchak saying, wow, my little king, one who was born with the qualities of a king, and from him the kings are going to come, he's already fulfilling his role. He killed the arch tyrant of the world. So why did the rabbi say he's a murderer? That he committed murder? He's a hero. Because if you kill Hitler because you want to rid the world of a tyrant, you're a tzaddik and you're a hero. But if you kill Hitler because you want his uniform, then you're a murderer, even though you killed Hitler. Esav killed Nimrod not because he wanted to rid the world of a Rasha, because he wanted his magical clothing. That's a murderer, even if you kill Nimrod. You do it with the wrong intention, you're a murderer. What makes it okay is that your kavanah is l'shem shamayim. If you're not Kavanah, it's not a shame. You're a simple murderer. It doesn't matter the difference who you kill. The other two things are the same thing. Yitzchak could have understood that Esav is doing something that this is what kings do. And if he does it with the right intention, it's not an aver. For instance, says that he violated an engaged woman. Tosis right away says, by Goyim, there's no such thing as an engaged woman. What makes a married woman is they consummate the marriage. Up until that point, she's an unmarried woman. So basically, he lived with an unmarried woman. He seduced an unmarried woman. Doesn't say that he raped her, he seduced her. That means with her consent. Why? Couldn't you imagine Esav saying the following, if you want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he did this with good intentions? Here's this woman who's engaged to an idol worshiper. If she goes through with the marriage, she's finished. She's going to be an idol worshiper the rest of her life. I'm the son of Yitzchak, the grandson of Avraham, a believer in God, right? Wouldn't it be better, and then they could have as many wives as you want? Wouldn't it be better if I seduced her, took her away from her fiancé, and made her my wife, and she'll have a life of belief in God? You want to makarev her. Don't you know, unfortunately, that there are people who... Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. They have good intentions. But in the sake of Kiruv, cross the red line of how to be Makarev people. Who hug and kiss and what's it called? But it's all in the for the sake of Kiruv, of bringing these people closer to Yiddishkeit. But it's definitely inappropriate. But good intentions. There are people like that. There were people like that. Without mentioning any names or... So, Yitzchak Avinu said, and that's what kings do. Kings do things inappropriate, but works out for the good. Where did the royalty come from? Yehuda and Tamar. And Lot and his daughters. And David and Bathsheba. So, that's part of what it means being a king. So Yitzchok says, "This is this. He didn't do any. He didn't commit adultery. He's just not yet honed in to what's okay and what's not okay. But it's not adultery. It wasn't adultery. It was kiruv, just inappropriate kiruv. And how about idolatry? Couldn't you see Esav portraying himself, or at least making other people think, I'm not serving idolatry. I'm going to infiltrate the idolaters because sometime I have to destroy them. And the best way to destroy them is to infiltrate them. Make them think that I'm part of them, and then I can expose them and whatever. They did that here in the 50s. Children after the Holocaust were brought up by Goyim, sent to convents, monasteries, to be brought up as Christians. And they didn't know who these children were, and they knew they were there. So they used to stand in yeshiva bachrim without yarmulkes, right? That no one would know that they're Jewish or frum. And girls, say, to infiltrate these places, to get in, to find these Jewish children and to get them out. And they had to disguise themselves as people who wanted to be part of the, to convert. So it happened that Yad Lachim sent these people into, what's it called, Pi'ilim, here in Eretz Israel. So couldn't you see Esav at least trying to convince others that this was his intention if it wasn't? So these three major averas can be looked upon, well, this is the king, he's, you know, the emerging king, this is what kings do. And Yitzchak had to give Esav the benefit of the doubt, because that's the halacha. You could say negative, you could say positive. Why assume the negative if you can say the positive? Look, he has the makeup of a king. For the kings are going to come from him. This is something that kings do. So he hasn't yet honed it to perfection, but his intentions are good. You don't know. So if that's the case, then why did Avraham Avinu have to die? He obviously, if he would have seen what Esav did, he would have known for sure that it was there were three major sins here. He wouldn't have explained it the way that I did. And Rivka knew. How come? Because there's a very big difference between Avraham and Rivka and Yitzchak. Yitzchak lived a sheltered life. Yishmael was sent away, right? He only saw either righteous people or wicked people. Those are the only people he saw around him. He didn't see fakers, people who appeared to be righteous, but their intentions were negative. He never saw people like that. So he assumed that if somebody looks like they're doing something that could be interpreted good or bad, give them the benefit of the doubt. But Avraham Avinu grew up amongst these kind of people, fakers. And Rivka for sure. Her brother was a cheat. Her father was a cheat. People who were total false people. They looked on the outside one way, and the inside she knew they were rotten. So she was sensitive to these kind of people. There was no place of giving the benefit of the doubt. There was no doubt. She could smell a faker a mile away. And Esav, even though he put on airs, she could tell that he was a Russian. So when you only have to judge somebody favorably when there's a doubt. If there's no doubt, there's nothing to judge them favorably. By Rivka and Avraham, there was no doubts. Therefore, Avraham had to die, and Rivka saw clearly. Yitzchak, there was a doubt, and you have a chiyuv. You're obligated to give the person the benefit of the doubt. That's what he did with Esav. So fine. So Rivka saw through Esav, Yitzchak couldn't. Halachically, he couldn't, because he had to give him the benefit of the doubt. So then, we said that Yitzchak recognized the fact that Esav wasn't like Yaakov, but that doesn't mean he recognized that he was evil. What didn't Yaakov do when he was impersonating Esav? He said, please, which he said Esav never says please, and he mentioned God's name. And Esav never mentions God's name. Says the Maral, Yitzchak saw that as a virtue in Esav that he mentioned God's name. Because Esav was in the fields hunting. He was in places where he wasn't allowed to mention God's name much of the time. So he was machmir on himself never to mention God's name at all for fear that he would mention it when you're not allowed to. But Yaakov was in a base medrash all day. Why shouldn't he mention God's name? So it's just a matter of what their personalities were, why he did that. Same thing. Esav has a personality of a king. Kings are not nice little people who say please and thank you all the time. They have to be very strong and macho kind of people. Okay, to your father you say please and thank you. He hasn't yet polished himself off. But this is part of his nature. This is what his job is going to be. So he's not a please and thank you person. Yaakov is a please and thank you person. Doesn't make Esav a rasha. That's his nature. And you can use it for the good. King's not supposed to say please and thank you good portion of the time. He's supposed to be strong and forceful. So Yitzchak interpreted these things as positive traits that could be used positive for a person who's going to be the king. And he looked at Yaakov's traits as positive for a person to be the Kohen Gadol. But Rivka was able to see through it because she was brought up with people who appeared one way but really were different. Yitzchak never saw people like that. So then the question only remains, so why didn't Rivka go and tell Yitzchak? Wouldn't her husband believe her? What was the problem? Why did she have to go and send Yaakov impersonating Esav? It's a pretty bad impersonation also, because it says that Yitzchak didn't know what was going on. He said the guy talks like Yaakov and he has hands like Esau. If he really wanted to impersonate him, he should have impersonated his voice too. So Shamshon Fulher says the following: Rivka could have convinced Yitzchak not to bless Esau. Esau is not going to be your king. What was the blessing? The blessing was physical things in the world. Tala Shamayim, Mishmanei Ha'aretz, right? Yavdu Chamin, dominion. That you don't give the Kohen Gadol. That you give the Melech. So of course, Esav, this bracha was for Esav. Rivka understood that no, it's not for Esav. Esav's not going to be the king. Esav is completely off the picture. He's a Rasha. So the kings are going to have to come from Yaakov too. Yaakov is going to have to produce both things. She could have convinced Yitzchak not to bless Esav, but she was afraid she wouldn't convince him to bless Yaakov with a full heart, because I'm going to give this nice yeshiva bacher dominion and physical material things. Not him. It's not him. Never. I'm not going to have a king. So she told Yaakov, I want you to go in and show your father that in what's necessary you can act like Esav and you can fool your father to think you're Esav. That when it's necessary, you also can be strong, and you also can be macho, and you also can have the qualities of a king, even though that's not your first nature. But you can suppress your nature and overcome it and act like Esav when it's necessary. That's what she had to convince Yitzchak by letting Yaakov convince him. And that's what Yitzchak said. Hayodayim edei, I see a kid in front of me with the hands of Esav and the voice of Yaakov. And since he didn't recognize him, he blessed him. Well, you shouldn't have blessed him. He said, look, I don't know what's going on over here. I'm not giving any blessings. That's what she said. She convinced him that this one child has both qualities. And both the Kohanim and the Malachim are going to come from him. And then only later, when Esav came in and he saw Gehenna open in front of him, he realized that Taka Esav's the one who's out of the picture. And that Yaakov is going to have to produce both things. And she convinced her husband that Yaakov has the ability to do that, because he could fool you into thinking he's Esav when it's necessary. So that means he has it within him to be able to produce both of these personalities, even though his major personality is the personality of the Kohen Gadol, but he can suppress and use his latent personality when it's necessary to. That she couldn't have convinced him with words. She had to convince him with action to show him that that's it. Now, in my estimation, that's one way of looking at this parasha. It answers a lot of questions and it gives a view that doesn't tell us that Esav and Yaakov were predestined to be a Rasha and a Tzaddik, but just the opposite. They were predestined to be different people. Both of them could have used their qualities for the good, for the bad, or indifferent. Yaakov chose to use his qualities for the good, he became the progenitor of the Jewish people. Esav chose to use his quality for the bad, he became an Esav. But people have free choice. We don't all have the same choices because we're not all the same people. But ultimately, it evens out, and it's fair that we all are put into situations where we can function in a positive, righteous way, or negative, an evil way, or in a powerful way. That's up to our free choice. Yeah.
Also was
Vladi,
was British, and it said that he also had
a tendency
to be a murderer, but then he didn't kill Shaul, tried to kill him his whole life, and he didn't kill Shimi Ben Gera, of course, in his whole life.
Right, and he did kill plenty of people when he was supposed to kill them, right.
But not
right, exactly.
Right.
King.